man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya. It's your boy, Ify Wadi Way, and I'm in the studio with my friends. So let me go ahead and introduce you to them. First up, we have Christmas Zaddy himself, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Ify, I'm just getting ready for the most wonderful time of the year. What's good is Dave reminded me that a thing that the people tend to sleep on and they should think about more often is the Christmas stocking as a conveyance for gifts. Like, it might be a bit of a drag to do for like a whole bunch of people, but if you have like one key person, somebody in your family, somebody in your relationship with, you know, that you really want to, you know, get something special for Christmas, the stocking really allows you to like amalgamate a lot of little presents into one big extravaganza presentation. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing that you can kind of like chip away at all year. If you're the kind of person that like, you know, December 1st rolls around, you're like, oh my God, I got to shop. With the stocking, every time you see like a little thing, it could be a little personal, you know, health item. It could be a little sweet, a little kitchen implement. It could be a regional candy, a vintage postcard. Oh, just all sorts of little things like that. Start, you know, just snag them when you see them and then like put them aside. And then by the time the end of the year rolls around, you put them all together and you put them in a festive sock and whammo, you're in business.
Ooh.
I mean, Alonzo, I often think you would be a great partner to have. And right now, like, the spoiling that Mr. Dave is getting, like,
I'll tell you, he's the king of the stocking. Like, the one he puts together for me is just like untouchable. And that's a thing that carried over from his childhood, because in my house growing up, we had the stockings and they basically had like candy canes and mini Hershey bars in them, you know, like the Halloween size. And that was it. That was, you know, that was fine. We certainly enjoyed that. Maybe an orange. But he came from a household where like gifts in the stocking was a thing. And so I have learned over the years with him how to do it, but I don't do it nearly as well as he does. He is my senpai.
Well, I'm glad that you're benefiting from that. We were not a stocking family. We did Christmas at my grandparents in Nebraska, who did not have a fireplace. And I don't know if that's why we didn't hang stockings. Like, that there wasn't an out. Like, they spent all their time being like, hush, child, it's fine. He can come without a fireplace.
We didn't have one either. We hung him on a cabinet somewhere.
Oh, nice. Okay. But yeah, we weren't. I think of them more as a decoration item than like a gift giving vessel. And I like your version much better.
Yeah. Give it a shot. Yeah. You never know.
No, that's solid. Yeah. I've only done stockings every here and there. It's not like a consistent thing. And I was kind of searching for stockings, but I think the fun is designing them too. So I'll see if I can get like one design run in and then I'll fill it with stuff because, you know, Naomi just loves crafts.
Oh, cute.
Yes. You know who is also cute? The queen of the the queen of the Midwest, Drea Clark. What's good?
That was good. You saw Mr. Segway right there. Mm. Hey guys, what's good with me? The vaccine, y'all. Like, living these vaccine dreams. They obviously started giving treatments in the UK and Canada last week. We got like a flight announcement when the vaccine literally landed at LAX last night, and they've started the US rollout. And I know it's going to be a slow process and will be as muddled, confusing. States, I'm sure at some point, will be fighting over the distribution, who gets how many, and there'll be bumps to come, and we live in bumps now. But for me, I'm focusing on just the positivity and the light at the end of the tunnel. And also, like, the very first woman who got the shot out of trials was in the UK. And they chose, they look for those. Like, they think of who specifically are we going to give this to. And the first people getting them very deservedly are frontline workers and people, elderly people in like home care, or sorry, like nursing homes situations. Yeah. And the very first person in the world who got it was a 90-year-old woman about to be 91 And there was something about that too, that so much of the rhetoric of, oh, don't worry about it. Like the people who are, that it's, you know, fatal for are old or infirm, and as if they don't matter. And there was something about validating the life of everyone by choosing this older woman to get the first one. And so seeing that, or seeing like, there's one of the first people in Michigan today was a woman who works at a hospital as a cleaner and has been responsible for cleaning COVID wards this whole time, and that respecting life in all of these ways that I love seeing. And this is a very good thing for me. It's what's good, some could say.
As it were.
As it were.
Oh, well, that warms me up. Warms me up.
Well, what's good with you? What's good and warm with you?
What's good with me is... That's
a loaded question. Stick to warm. Or just stick to good. Don't tell me about the warm.
Good and warm, you know, good. Took some fun holiday photos. I'm feeling good. I think, let me see. Let me look at the sketchy deji. Yeah, by the time this is out, you'll see my branded goldfish Christmas photos I had to take with Naomi that are really cute. And I might just turn into some Christmas cards. We're wearing matching onesie pajamas, eating goldfish on the couch. It was really sweet. And I was real happy to do it. So I'm excited for people to see that. And really, I think this is the first time in a long while, especially since I've been on my own, that I've really got to get in the Christmas mode. Because I feel like usually like the getting the tree and the whatchamadinker and then doing that with roommates and trying to split that up. Now that I have my own place, I know it's me. I've been hanging up stuff. I still have lights in boxes. We'll see if those go up, and we'll see if I'll adhere to, you know, my mom's roots and keep everything up until Mardi Gras, and definitely on purpose and not because I'm too lazy to take things down.
I always go with Epiphany, but I like, Ash Wednesday. Why not?
Yeah. All right. Well, today we're discussing this Christmas. Of course, we're going to have the Christmas Zaddy Christmas Movie Minute and some staff picks. But first, it's time for our news segment, Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? Last week at Disney's Investors Day, or what I called Nerd Christmas, they announced a ton of new TV shows and movies. Here's a few of them. So we had a bunch of Star Wars spinoff, Rangers of the New Republic, Ahsoka, a Rogue One spinoff called Andor, and some others, a new Star Wars movies from Patty Jenkins called Rogue Squadron, a new Mighty Ducks series out of nowhere, along with a bunch of other remakes and prequels, some new animation features Encanto and Raya the Last Dragon, a bunch of Marvel series, WandaVision, Loki, The Falcon, Winter Soldier, Hawkeye. I'm going to say it because it's not on here, and I was going to say something mean to Casey, but you know, it's Christmas spirit, so I won't make fun of him and rib him or his beret. But we got Ironheart, which is Riri Williams, and me and a friend of the pod, Cody, was talking about how, you know, our like little black girl is gonna look and see Ironheart in the flesh, because, you know, it could be in the comics and that's great, but like everyone knows we're watching like media things like this. It's impossible to name all of them. I won't, but is this important? Do you care?
You know, so much of film Twitter following this announcement was either sort of, you know, undue excitement over all of it, or a very immediate poo-pooing of the whole thing and like, oh, yes, who cares and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, look, I take all this stuff on a case-by-case basis, because a lot of these things, they announce them and you think, oh, that could be really good. And then it isn't, or it doesn't get made, or they announce something, you think, oh, no, that's a terrible idea. And then you see it. It's, oh, well, OK, that's actually exciting. So I plan to continue to take these on a case-by-case basis. I'm delighted that Patty Jenkins is directing a Star Wars movie, just because I'm delighted to hear that she's directing whatever she's going to direct. Yeah. I'm thrilled that Justin Simien is going to be doing a Lando Calrissian show. You know, because respected indie directors got to eat, you know, they got bills to pay. So if they're going to do
they
that,
they got to eat well.
Exactly. If it takes IP to make that happen, then so be it. I'm not going to stand here and be like, yeah, I don't care. But I'm also not going to be like, oh, yippee, this 15th from the top Star Wars character is finally going to get their moment in the sun. I'll take them as they come and we'll see how they are.
I love big like days like this because there's so much hashtag discourse, right? So much discourse, so much, you know, we resurrected this dead argument of the art form of superhero movies and Star Wars movies. We start in the diversity arguments. We start this. And then what's fun is on TV writer Twitter, you got that. There's nothing TV writers love more than like dispensing hot tips and advice. Like someone was like, there was one writer who was like, hey, if they're announcing it, the room is already filled and probably done. And I was like, what? Like, you mean this show that no, like, no, like to me, it's always funny. And I think this y'all are well aware of this too, as you know, industry folk, how seeing the discourse versus like knowing what actually is and seeing how many people try and come from this place of like, oh, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Especially to go back to Alonzo on the, and I don't mean offense by saying this because I'm calling them critics too, but really a lot of them are just people with YouTube channels who talk about movies. Like there's a lot of that that gets smushed into the critics discourse. And I was like, no, you have no appreciation for film and have only talked about superhero movie news your whole YouTube's career. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm just saying if you can't...
There's a distinction.
Yeah.
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 I think one of the other things that was important about this announcement, other than all of the projects in it, which I agree with Alonzo case by case,
yeah,
is that Disney now is such an enormous umbrella. The scope of what, like the idea that just the highlights are going to be these Marvel things, mm-hmm, when in reality, they also announced a ton of things.
Oh, yeah.
For Hulu, like, they're doing a Martin Short, Steve Martin, and Selena Gomez comedy. The Kate McKinnon version of that Elizabeth Holmes story, The Dropouts, finally, yeah, coming out. David E. Kelly is doing another mystery. He did, obviously, like Big Little... Well, he's done a lot of things, but Big Little Lies, and most recently, that Nicole Kidman, The Undoing. He's doing a Nicole Kidman and Melissa McCarthy mystery. And then like FX has a bunch of shows. Taika Waititi has a comedy about Native American teenagers in Oklahoma called Reservation Dogs. Why the Last Man is finally coming out. Like, so it's this idea of National Geographic is under this umbrella.
Oh, yeah.
Like ESPN, like it's so huge and how they're tying it in. So I think the fun thing are all the shows and the creative possibility and how that's going to filter us. But what strikes me so much is a conglomerate at work. Like,
oh, yeah,
you've watched this thing just like...
metastasize.
Oh, metastasize. Yes, just like spread and take... exactly, metastasize. Alonzo, yeah. Words.
Somebody that I know on Twitter pointed out that what really makes this interesting from an industry perspective is now we know why HBO Max was in such a hopped up hurry to announce that all the Warner Brothers movies were going to be streaming there in 2021, because they knew this giganto announcement was coming down the road and they didn't want to look like an also-ran.
No, it's fascinating. I'm interested to see how it all plays out and how they ping off each other, and it'll get more and more like crossover and symbiotic. Like Captain America will come on to ESPN for the Pro Bowl. I don't know sports, but you know what I'm saying.
So of course, because all roads lead to streaming now, Warner Brothers announced last week that they would be dropping their entire 2021 movie slate onto HBO Max. And several prominent movie directors have stepped forward to voice their disgust with the deal. Christopher Nolan, our Turkey of 2020, questioned the economics of the deal and said he feared for all the other people that work on the films, like actors, grips, electricians, etc. Judd Apatow called it disrespectful to the people who made the films and certainly made me appreciate Universal, unquote. And Denis Villeneuve even wrote an essay in Variety blasting the new deal. Is this important? Do you care?
I'll say that I it's very hard for me to get my words out. I'm so involved in this. I have an element of sympathy for them in the sense that, you know, a lot of these, there's such a partnership in terms of that kind of blend of art and commerce. Mm-hmm. And when you're choosing at that level, like where to put a project like this and how it'll be treated, what kind of artistic leniency you'll be given as a director, what kind of say you'll have in the cut. A lot of them get, like, it's contractually written in the what involvement in marketing they'll get, because a lot of films have been bitten by that in the past. And in finding out that HBO Max did this announcement without consulting any of the filmmaking teams in advance that it was at least coming, that to me seems like that's literally just disrespectful. I certainly am someone who also sees on the studio side of it a pretty unwinnable scenario in terms of a theatrical rollout for a lot of these, and how do you do it? And I get that everything they do is money oriented, but I do think that they did not do best by the people working for them and the artists at that level. And there's certainly things, you know, them bringing up the guild, like the Directors Guild or any other unions at this point, there's a money loss that they're going to hit in many levels because of not being able to have this. That said, I don't think that they would be able to hit the box office tiers. They would get those bonuses at anyway if they had a theatrical with three theaters open. But, you know, if you're not making the whole team privy to those things, it's going to affect Warner Brothers in the future of which big name, you know, obviously there's franchises they own, but which big name people are going to come and set up at their shingle is a very big deal. So,
and as much as I appreciate what Nolan is saying, as far as like, you know, that this is a deal that has the potential to mess with a lot of people's livelihoods, I don't know that like IATSE was getting a back end on these movies.
No,
so.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, no, that's the one thing is like, it's so hard, right? Because this is going to bring to the forefront a huge kind of issue with you know, the film industry and streaming right now, right? Is that streaming lives on the site and there's no way for back end because there's a subscription service. There's, you know, the point system doesn't work. But I think what Drea said is 100% true. No one is going to see the movie, and I think it's irresponsible to put movies in a theater in a pandemic. And the fact that you are thinking about your wallet, and everyone who spoke on this is rich. I'm not hearing indie directors being mad about this. That's people who are overtly rich, and I'm richer than rich. And they're like, oh, we don't get to make more money.
Well, it's also this thing that's so insulting too. And I mean, again, I get it. They're making films in a different level with a different money. Mm-hmm. But the amount of films I've worked on or have programmed or watched people work on that never get theatrical, that only get digital, and like, cool, do those count less? I don't see you guys like fighting for that. The other thing with this is there is a built-in, like, it's either a 30 or 60-day window that they're doing a day and date, so they will have theatrical in the markets where there's theatrical availability. People will also just be able to get it digitally and just on HBO Max, and then they go just to theatrical, and then like another 30 or 60 days later, people can rent them from like iTunes or Amazon or whatever, which does go towards a back end, which does go, I mean, like once you recoup, which, you know, truthfully, a lot of these films are not going to recoup. There's like $300 million budget. You're going to make $18 back. But
like I said, I do understand and agree, because also like, you know, I don't know how it works on the theatrical side, but I know if you shoot something for TV and they move it to streaming, there's a payment that needs to be made. And I don't know if that has applied with. So there's a lot of kind of money. I don't want to like brush over the fact that this is true. Like if they go digital, there's a lot of money being made. But I think this is specific circumstances. I think if this wasn't a pandemic, then it'd be a huge rough thing. But I think even people who would risk going to a theater are going to be like, well, I'm going to just watch it at home and be safe, which is kind of what we want now.
Right. Right. Without the pandemic, I think the theaters would have a lot more clout in this, and they'd be able to say, no, you're not, you know, which we've seen, like, you know, Universal years ago tried to make Tower Heist sort of a day and date or short window or something. And AMC and Regal were like, the hell you are. And they had to back down. But yeah, now all bets are off. And yes, Warner Brothers is desperate to get more subscribers to HBO Max. But yeah, I need a better argument than directors basically trying to couch their butt my back end as a, oh, you're hurting the, you know, the key grips here. It's like, I don't buy that.
Yeah. So, but we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about this Christmas just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hi. Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we host Round Springfield.
Round Springfield is a Simpsons adjacent podcast where we talk to your favorite Simpsons writers, voice actors, and everyone who's worked on the show to talk about shows that aren't The Simpsons. So we're going to be talking to people like David X. Cohen, Yeardley Smith, Tim Long about other projects they've worked on, sometimes projects that didn't go well, some failures, some rejection,
some failed pilots, some failed life events.
Yeah, we just talked to all the failures of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
So if you really love your Simpsons trivia and want to get to know the people who have worked on The Simpsons a little bit better, come by Round Springfield.
Every other week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Whiteyway. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Wait, can we clarify quickly? We're in a virtual studio.
Okay.
We respect the guidance and guidelines that we should be living by.
We believe in science.
I mean, the picture shows we're in the virtual booth, but for those who don't follow us on Twitter, for shame. We are in the virtual stew. Today we're talking about This Christmas. Alonzo, why don't you provide us with a brief synopsis?
Ah, sure. Okay, so this is a film from 2007. It's about the Whitfield family getting together for the holidays. The matriarch, Madeir, played by the great Loretta Devine, is welcoming home her children, who all have various dramas going on in her life. There's oldest daughter, Lisa, who didn't go to college and stayed at home to help run the dry cleaning business, and she is in a marriage that's not great with somebody who is not only cheating on her, but trying to steal her money. Her sister, Kelly, is a professional and very much likes to swan about her Harvard education and is looking to maybe meet somebody, and maybe it's going to be Santa. Oldest brother, Quentin, is a jazz musician on the run from mobsters, and he decides it might be a good time to come home for Christmas after all, even if they wind up following him there, played by, of course, Idris Elba. There's Mel is a college student who keeps changing her major at Spelman, and the youngest son, Michael, who everybody calls baby, wants to sing, even though mom is not down for that because the patriarch of the Whitfield family was a jazz musician who abandoned the family years earlier. All of these stories come crossing together in a beautiful Victoria Park house in Los Angeles, and lots of meals are consumed.
There's also another middle son who is in the Marine Corps.
I forgot. Claude in the Marines, who has several secrets that the family will be discovering over the course of the film.
Indeed. That's funny. You wrapping that up and being like, how to make this is like my main takeaway of this movie. I appreciated so much that This Christmas packed in an entire soap opera-sized cast.
Oh, yeah.
And storylines into 2 hours, like fully, you could like Days of Our Lives could have made weeks out of all of the story that these characters whipped through in this amount of time. I was like, yes.
Yeah, no, this is coming off of, you know, that huge huge kind of string of when you had your best mans, your soul foods, and it's following that same formula in a great way. You know, it's it pretty much just gives you, like, you know, the wife whose husband is trash and she can't seem to figure out, or she doesn't want to see it. The guy who's on the run from the law for some reason or other, who just needs to settle it with the family. The other guy with a bad track record. Like, it has all the stuff. Like, you can build it and rebuild it like Legos with other black movies, like your Barbershop. You see elements of that. You see that. So this was interesting because when watching this again, because I did see this before.
You have seen this before?
Course, okay. Oh yeah, 100%. Every black movie like this, I've seen it before, and I've seen it on the reruns. But it's it is like, it's so funny because I think, you know, the black movies that always seem to get greenlit, it always felt like it had to have like bits of this formula. Like, you know, the Chris Brown arc has elements of Sister Act. The like it's just like a build a movie, but it's a good Christmas movie. And watching this again made me realize that all of the black movies of these like early aughts, like season, all could have been holiday movies if you just threw it in there.
Yeah, they just happened to be over Christmas.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I haven't seen this before. I've seen bits of it like on TV, you know, flipping through things, but I hadn't watched it all the way through. Had I realized it had story for a full set, like, you guys, the compactness of the storytelling here was like truly amazing to me and doing a lot of work. Also, lest I forget it later, I have to mention my highlight, especially because we all talked about this together, that Delroy Lindo, at one point they do a dance, like they do Soul Train, like boogie down the sort of aisle of people, the line. Yeah. Delroy Lindo does the exact same dance in this that he did in Da Club, or no, in Da Club, Jesus, in Da Five Bloods.
Oh, funny.
Is that the name of the movie? Am I saying
Yeah, Five Bloods.
Movie.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, Five Bloods. That when they get to Vietnam and they walk into, yes, into club, into Five Bloods. Thank you. That the, when they dance into this club in that movie, he does the same hip shimmy. And that was my Christmas miracle because I loved watching him do that now. Delroy Lindo is a, this is also soap opera style, a remarkably attractive family. Like, you guys, not a dud in the bunch. Just the,
assorted in-laws and hanger-ons, also very attractive.
Good Lord, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a movie that kind of covers a lot of black tropes, but I think it's also that thing of, you know, one of the reasons that My Big Fat Greek Wedding was such a huge hit was you didn't have to be Greek to sort of recognize your own experience in it. Like, it's so specific that it becomes universal. For me, this movie is one that I really relate to because I'm the baby of a huge family. I'm the youngest of seven children. And when we all gather together at a house or other, you do that thing where you revert to the familial roles, you know, and so I think that's one of the things that's kind of fun to watch here. Like the way that the sisters have had this beef with each other for years and they keep passively aggressively lobbing at each other, you know, every and almost every conversation, the way they talk to the youngest, the way they defer to Quentin, even though he's been gone for years, like all this different stuff. It's like, yep, I'm clocking all this dynamic that very much feels true to me.
There's also something very universal about delusions that families will get behind. And just like, so one of the things when the movie starts and we wake up with Madeir and Joe, and they're obviously a couple, and it's, you know, they're the, to what you assume at the beginning, the matriarch and patriarch of this family. And then it starts with her being like, okay, you got to sneak out now. And they're like, in their 60s, like they're grown humans. And it very quickly becomes this thing that like it's a charade the whole family goes along with. They pretend that the mother's boyfriend of the last 6 years doesn't live there out of some sense of propriety. And that's the kind of like family ridiculousness. Like no one really knows why that charade started. Everyone is kind of cognizant of it, but they're all playing along. And I think most families have something of that, of a like, oh, we don't talk about whatever or whatever it is. It was such a good detail of a specificity that gave you like a nice story hook and a good conflict that can then, you know, presumably be overcome by the end. But also like, yes, this is what families do. This is nonsense.
And Iffy, I'm sure you appreciate it. You always like to talk about how movies that are aimed at a certain demographics, whether they're black films or, mm-hmm. or feminist films or queer films, that, you know, where they so often have to feel the need to talk about the struggle.
Yes.
And this movie, it's like, it's not like there's, I think, two speaking white characters. And it's like, it's not, that doesn't come up. It's not important where this movie exists in its own world of strivers and successes and students and, you know, people with dreams and achievements or whatever. And it's not about, you know, the black anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a family that could be any family. Like, I could see this taking place in Boston with a white family. And
any semi-wealthy, yeah, upper-middle-class, yeah, family, yeah.
Yeah, and it's real great. And I mean, like, this, you know, this is 2007, and this is a banger of a cast. You know, you got Idris Elba.
I mean,
you got Lindo. You got
Regina King.
Regina King. Okay, I always.
Oh yeah.
I'm afraid I'm about to say Hall instead of,
yep,
King.
Nope, that's
Regina King. You're not alone there.
Sharon
and
Leal.
Regina King in lingerie. Whoa, bonus.
Twice.
Mega bonus. Bonus. You're like,
she looked what amazing.
Did I do to deserve this?
Yes. No, I think that they also do a good job. I want to credit, I keep bringing up the enormity of the cast and their storylines, but I think this is a writer-director, and mm-hmm, I think he handled an ensemble piece so well. Like,
oh, yeah,
each of these...
The traffic directing, you know.
Yes, they have, mm-hmm, an arc. They all have something to do, and they integrate with each other in specific ways, but not exclusive. Like, it's, you know, you have the two older sisters and their passive-aggressive, very believable sisterly relationship, but that's also not the only... They have... You know what I mean? You see them interacting with their other siblings. And,
oh, yeah,
and so there's that. And even just like, we talked about this when we mentioned, when we were discussing Before Midnight, but this film has multiple scenes of large dinners and like family meals. Mm. It is so, so hard to direct scenes with that many people at them, with having them be visually interesting, maintaining conversation flow. Like, if you think of just eye line, whatever, this is like maybe nuts and bolts, but eye lines at a dinner scene are a nightmare. they have 15 people at that table. Like, blew my mind.
Oh, just look, a Christmas movie where somebody has to have a conversation about, okay, yeah, I'm making the big Christmas meal. Who's making dinner the night before?
Like, right.
That's a thing. And nobody, yeah, ever talks, yeah, about that in,
oh,
movies,
yeah,
you know, the
justice
delegation of that stuff.
Justice for dinner the night before. The thing that was most recognizable for me, my family's much smaller than this one, but the idea of the, you know, the first night that everybody's back, basically the Columbus Short, the Marine character, wants to sneak out so he can meet up with Jessica Stroud, who we discover is his like secret white wife that he's gotten secretly married recently, and
yeah,
is going
and she's
to meet
secretly
her
pregnant,
and she's secret he to secret to him, like secrets on secrets. What a twist. But the idea of someone being like if my brother tried to go out when we were home for Christmas or Thanksgiving, and my sister and I would be like, yeah, hold on, let me throw on some lipstick.
Let me get my
why do you think you get to leave this place and we're not coming with you? Like, that,
yeah,
was such a recognizable moment to me. And that the people you run into when you go out are like, oh yeah, they went to high school with my brother. Like, it was, of course, like, that's exactly what's going to happen.
One of the, I think there's been a really interesting phenomenon, and that's, I think it's, we're going to see a bit of a change in that because this year in particular, you know, Hallmark has made such an effort to include, you know, more black leading roles and like interracial romances. And, you know, Lifetime finally gave us like an Asian American centered Christmas movie. But I think that part of the reason we saw kind of a little boomlet for black big screen Christmas movies was because once Hallmark and Lifetime really started bearing down on this, they kind of killed the idea of anybody making a standard white rom-com for the big screen because, you know, you got that at home all the time for free. So then what we started getting in theaters is, what can't they do? Let's do an R-rated comedy. Let's have a movie that's centered on black people. You know, let's do the stuff that you're not already getting at home all the time. And so in a brief window of time, you had like This Christmas, Almost Christmas, the Madea Christmas movie, Black Nativity, Best Man Holiday, you know, and I think that was very much a reaction of like, well, they're not doing it on TV, and so maybe people will buy a ticket. And now I think there's this discovery of like, oh, shit, there's an audience for these movies. Like, black people love Christmas movies, or white people love Christmas movies with black people in them. Whatever the math was on that, they've determined that there's a point to making these movies, that people will show up to see them, that people will tune in to watch them on TV, whatever.
I'm all for the commerce driving things, but I do think it is that idea, like you just said a phrase in there, like white people wanting to see how anyone else celebrates a thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's an important side of it too. For me, of the idea of, I'm always interested in how people experience Christmas, because mm-hmm. I say that in terms of not everyone celebrating Christmas, but especially in the United States, like it's, I mean, look around us, like it's a fulcrum of this part of year, and like a huge end of the year is shaped around this specific holiday, a holiday that not everyone celebrates in the sort of religious way that it was intended, but like there's a secular celebration of it, regardless of that's what you're acknowledging. You get this time off of work or school. And so I think that there's, that embracing that and me looking at how different people go, I find it infinitely interesting. And the small touches that do have cultural nods to them are great. Like in this, and obviously food is a gateway for all of it, but that first meal, in addition to being very impressed by how well it was shot and how this conversation was flowing, and that there was like shooting glances and little bits from that also looked delicious, and it was straight up like fried chicken and collard greens and cornbread. Like it was this very like Black Southern food. Like it was soul food. It looked so scrumptious.
I looked up the recipe for Sakatumi cake because they talked about that a couple times. I was like, oh yes, please.
You know what? There's a couple you might have paid better note of them, but there were a couple great small details like that where I was like, oh, I wonder if that must be a thing, like Sakatumi cake. And then she had a couple other, like the mom especially, Madeira, had a couple other references in general that I was like, oh, that must be a thing, or what a cool I want to know where that's from. I would love to briefly, before we get to the end of this, so the bad husband, he's like cheating on her, he's making a fool of her, and like she is like a woman for the ages, so how dare he, although how dare he even if she was trash. But her payback, I was like, oh, was this before or after Angela Bassett sat that other guy's car on fire? Because if you ever thought that was like the height of getting back at a man. So in this, her payback, he comes back. She's like, oh, take a shower. While he's in the shower, I don't care if I'm spoiling this movie. It's 13 years old. Baby oil all over the bathroom floor. Takes out all the towels. Regina King stands there next to this baby oiled floor and her husband about to get out of the shower dripping wet onto it with a belt in her hand. And then she whips him. And I was like, okay, part of me is cheering because you're like, you want her to have that vindication. Part of me is so inherently uncomfortable with the black man being struck that I was like, oh my God, the scene is ricocheting my brain.
It's a lot of things. And I mean, I will defer to Iffy on this one, but my thought is like, this is a black written and black directed film and it's being acted by two black actors. Who am I to say anything? Yes. I'm just going to enjoy the comeuppance of this awful, awful character is getting.
Was that your read, Iffy? Were you?
Oh, 100%. I was enjoying it. I was like, whip that man, you know? Some places people pay top dollar for that type of service. So be happy and leave that woman alone. I think it's time for our movie review.
We had someone tweet at us at Who Shot Ya about a suggestion for cleaning up our voting, which from Michael T. Wright, which I thought was so smart, who said, ship it, stream it, or skip it. As in, if you purchase it, it will be shipped to you.
Oh,
which I thought was so clever, you guys.
Keeping the S. Right. You guess, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like it. I'm a take it. So will you ship it, stream it, or skip it? Drea, why don't you start?
All right. This would be, I would say a stream it. Stream it for me. Mm-hmm. But like a very pleasant, cozy stream it. I think there's so much to enjoy here. It isn't a movie that has like a lot of subtext or nuances or whatever, but again, that's because it has so much story going on. And I do think all of the story is smartly rendered, incredibly appealing, charming performers. This director has somehow only done one film since then. And I hope that's because he's been doing everything else his heart desired. But yeah, I quite enjoyed this. So I will continue to watch in more detail every time it comes on my TV.
I'm a ship it. I wrote about this for my book, and I think that it's, I don't know if I've revisited it every year, but I've definitely gone back to this one on multiple occasions. And again, I just think as somebody from a large family, this movie gets large family dynamics really well, and it does so in a way that you can keep track of who everybody is and what they're about and where they are and all that stuff that is really challenging for any filmmaker to sort of get a handle on. And it's just, it's such an A-list ensemble. Like, I mean, you know, Regina King is about to set the world on fire with her directorial debut, One Night in Miami, that's going to be coming out in the next few weeks. But yeah, just like top to bottom, such a great cast, such a lovely movie, an L.A. Christmas movie that doesn't lean into like the sort of garish, we don't have snow, but we put lights on palm trees kind of thing. But at the same time, still feels very cozy and intimate. And I love the whole neighborhood where that's shot. So, yeah, I think for sure it's a ship it for me.
Yeah, I was kind of dancing between stream it, ship it, because, you know, I think it's a ship it because it needs to go on that Hood Classics shelf for everyone. And it's a jam-packed cast. What isn't there to like?
Can I add too that if you ever need a pick me up, the last 5 minutes of this film are out of character, just the entire cast back in that like boogie line. One by one come down. And it is, I could watch that on loop instead of like putting that digital like fireplace thing. I would just keep watching this cast. It was so wonderful.
Exactly. You think about what other movies you want to see all the characters out of character and just the cast interacting and like, honestly, you know,
the only thing it reminded me of was the end of Bring It On, when they all are like kind of as themselves but doing the cheers.
Oh, funny.
But they're like not even all together. This is all of them in one room cheering each other. It was so delightful.
Well, you know what else is delightful? Taking a quick little break and hearing from another show from Maximum Fun. So we'll be right back.
Schmanners. Noun. Definition. Rules of etiquette designed not to judge others, but rather to guide ourselves through everyday social situations.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
Every week on Schmanners, we take a look at a topic that has to do with society or manners. We talk about the history of it. We take a look at how it applies to everyday life. And we take some of your questions. And sometimes we do a biography about a really cool person that had an impact on how we view etiquette. So join us every Friday and listen to Schmanners on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
Manners, schmanners. Get it?
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Whiteyway. In the studio with me are
Alonso Duralde,
Drea Clark.
And it's time again for the Christmas Zaddy Christmas Movie Minute. Alonso gets 1 minute to discuss every Christmas movie he saw this past week. Alonso, are you getting sad that the Christmas season is ending soon?
You know, Paul F. Tompkins recently tweeted about how he's already feeling prematurely sad at the impending end of the holiday season. And I just said, this is the house I live in. I'm always chasing the dragon on this one. So, you know.
Nice. Oh, wow. Nice.
Well, it's time to ride again. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Go.
All right, I am devoting this week's minute to the very historic fact that we had two LGBT-centered cable Christmas movies, and they were both delightful. The Christmas Setup on Lifetime, directed by the wonderful indie director Pat Mills, stars real-life couple Ben Lewis and Blake Lee. It is the best Lifetime movie I've ever seen. It's better than 98% of the Hallmark movies I've ever seen. It's funny. It's sharp. It lands the queer stuff. It's super romantic. It's a delight. I can't recommend it highly enough. And then over on the Paramount Network of all places, we got Dashing in December with Peter Port. And of course, the actor who I always think of as the guy from the Call on Me video, who, as a city guy, country guy couple that get together, and they let the city guy, Juan Pablo Depache, by the way, the city guy gets to be kind of an a-hole for the whole thing, which is pretty unusual. Usually everybody's all super nice in these movies. Anyway, charming, delightful, and super gay. So kudos for both of these movies. Loved them.
I saw the beginning of Dashing December just last night as I was eating. I did not see. I would have continued if I'd known those two were going to get together.
Oh,
I thought it was going to go a whole different direction.
Well, they play kind of bait and switch with you, because when they introduce the Peter Port character, people ask about his ex, Lindsay.
Ooh, okay.
And it's only later you discover, oh, Lindsay's a dude.
I like that.
They were truly handsome men that I would very much like to see together.
I suspect it's going to be aired a few more times this month. I will keep my peepers open.
Yeah, I will peep as well.
Those are exciting. And for anyone who doesn't know, although they should know, because I feel like it's my thing that I bring to the world as a reminder of Alonzo's little book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. If people don't know, like, I'm failing. I shouldn't get, I get zero cuts of anything, and I should have that slashed dramatically. But I do think that book would be perfect if you are a stocking haver, like Alonzo's family, and not like mine.
And weirdly enough, my best sales day of the year is always Christmas. So don't feel like, oh, I'm running out of season, it's not going to be any good. No, you pick it up on the day, and then you have a whole year to get ready for next year.
Yeah, people feel that that max charge of the Christmas spirit. And was like, I need the book now.
Yeah.
So feel free to do that.
Nice.
Well, now it's time for our staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Drea, why don't you start?
Okay, I will, sir. My staff pick this week is Let Them All Talk, which is the new Steven Soderbergh film. It's on HBO Max. I wish it was a little more accessible for people who don't have HBO Max, but you know, that's kind of their thing, is getting you over to HBO Max. So if you're not familiar with it, it stars an upstart actress named Meryl Streep that I see big things for. She plays a novelist author who won't fly, and so she gets her agent to book her on this cruise so she can get to where she's going, and then for some reason has gets two old friends of hers to come along, and one of which is played by Candace Bergen, and she's so good in this and so saucy and like different than how you've normally seen her. And then Meryl's nephew Lucas Hedges also comes, and then Gemma Chan, who plays the very beautiful agent. And it's all of these things that are like very cozy, like the kind of literature I'd read, and directed by Steven Soderbergh. So like run through this wash of like cerebral and artistic veneers. So I found this so enjoyable, and yeah, I mean, like, he's a great filmmaker, and it's a great cast, and a really
And Diane Weiss is the other friend.
Oh my God, I didn't even mention Diane Weiss, whom I love so much. So, like, yeah, it's solid and lovely. Let Them All Talk. It's definitely one of those titles that I'll never remember unless I'm staring at it. Like, I'm like, you know, that one, the boat with the ladies on it, that one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was shot on the Queen Mary too. And I've been saying, like, you know what, for Adam Sandler and all those people who make a movie just so they can go on a vacation, like, you could actually have a good vacation and make a good movie at the same time. It doesn't have to be either or.
Yeah.
So my pick this week is also streaming, and I'm going to once again bang the drum for Steve McQueen's Small Axe, which this week drops the final chapter, Education, which is just so great and ties in so well to the whole theme of the entire anthology. It's about a kid who is, you know, because he's having issues reading, the educational system kind of dumps him off on this quote unquote special school where basically kids get ignored. And, you know, the main school that gets rid of them doesn't have to worry about these kids dragging down their overall test scores. And it's about how the mothers in the West Indian community in London have to sort of like organize and fight the system to get their kids taken out of these crap institutions and put back into a regular school. And so, you know, it's partly the kid's story, which is told really well, but then also partially about his mother, who is exhausted from working all these jobs, but now has to get politicized by her peers in the community to realize that that her son is not being treated fairly by the system. And, you know, again, these, you know, one of the things about these streaming services is like, oh, you can make your 3.5 hour movie, or you can make an 8-episode limited series. But I also like the idea that it gives somebody like Steve McQueen, you know what? I can tell this story in 50 minutes. I can tell this story in 65 minutes. I don't need 90. I don't need 2 hours. And now I have a venue under which to do that. You know, I wish Pedro Almodovar got to direct 4 other shorts to go with The Human Voice, so it doesn't get lost in the void somewhere. But yeah, Small Axe is one of the great achievements of 2020. Amazon Prime, check them all out. But the last one, Education, loved it.
Nice.
Ooh, well, I'm a pick up something I talked about and bring it back and make that my staff pick, and that's going to be 1997's Soul Food.
Nice.
Definitely worth checking out. George Tillman Jr. directed it and wrote the screenplay, another writer-director, much like the one who made this film. And Tillman went on to direct many episodes of This Is Us, Luke Cage, produced The Hate U Give, Mudbound, Barbershop, The Next Cut, everything I talked about. It seems like Tillman has had his hand in it. So definitely worth checking out. It's what I described as a hood classic, and also does feature Mekhi Phifer.
And lots of meals.
Yeah, lots of meals. So Vanessa Williams and Vivica A. Fox kicking it.
Don't come hungry.
Yeah.
Don't come hungry.
Come hungry.
I don't know if we named the director of This Christmas.
Preston A. Whitmore II.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just in terms of you shouting out that one.
And I wonder how autobiographical it is, since he named the family Whitfield.
Yeah.
Oh, true. Ooh, true.
Yeah.
Sleuthy. Ooh. Sleuthy.
Well, Drea, Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. You know, it's almost Christmas. You know,
that's right.
a couple more sleeps till Christmas. but if you are thinking of the next Christmas gift or gift for any occasions, you can purchase a Jumbotron. Just go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a promotional one. Speaking of it, Christmas, that is, you can now give MaxFun memberships as a gift. If you need a great gift for someone you care about, give them the MaxFun membership. It helps you out and it helps us out. Go to https://members.maximumfun.org/gift card to pick one up. It's great, especially if you have like a friend who's like, man, I want you to up your movie watching game. Let me put you on these two folks who's gonna guide you in the right direction and one guy who I don't know what he's thinking.
These people are gonna put the S in your HTTP.
Yeah. Oh, well, and if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYour@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.